Hi, everyone. This is Reeve with a special note to the listeners. We recorded this early on Wednesday before news broke that University of Texas System Chancellor Francisco Cigueroa was accepting UT Austin President Bill Powers' resignation effective June 2nd. So know that that was the outcome as you go into our conversation that preceded it. Enjoy.
Texas talking, what was that you said?
Texas talking,
gonna hoop upside your head.
Texas talking,
tell me who can you trust when Texas guys are Texas guys
love. Hi, this is Sam Monroe. I serve as president of Lamar State College in Port Arthur, and I'm welcoming you today to the TripCast, and your host is Reeve Hamilton, and I send you all the best greetings from Port Arthur, the city that oils the world.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast. It is the second week of July, and I'm joined by executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hi there.
And senior reporter Jay Root.
Hello.
Who's from that region, the Port Arthur region?
Correct. He oils the world.
Jay oils our podcast for sure. Anyone have any questions on
the
first
topic?
Can I go
wash now?
Yeah. Go take a shower quick.
Right.
I don't want to just jump into a monologue.
So you don't?
Can someone ask me a question about...
Sure. Reeve, do you have a monologue for us?
Yeah. Reeve, would you like to give us the weekly monologue on the University of Texas at Austin?
Thank you.
Is Bill Powers in trouble?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of awkward to talk about this timing-wise because we're recording this on Wednesday morning, and within 28 hours, I'd say, we should know if Bill Powers is still
fired.
The president of the University of Texas at Austin or not, or if he is, I mean, he's definitely on his way out. We just don't know the timeline. It could be tomorrow. It could be in June, basically. So what's happened is last week, the chancellor of the UT system, Francisco Cigueroa, asked Powers to agree to step down effective at the end of October and announce it in August. And the alternative he was apparently given was, or you might be fired at the upcoming meeting, which is Thursday.
Might be fired or you will be fired?
It's been, sources have presented it as an ultimatum.
It was right. Basically but, jump or I'll push you.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But I think, the firing the president comes with a certain level of risk, right? I mean, you just have the legislators are sort of going ballistic over this. The Association of American Universities, which is the most prestigious group of research universities in the country, their president has come down and said, this is horrible, this is awful.
The Alumni Association
Powers
is out
is
of control.
Chairman, right?
Powers is currently their chairman.
Right.
And that term is up in October. So that was supposedly part of Cigueroa's thinking. It's like once your AAU chairmanship is up, then it's time for you to go.
So what, you know, what changed? Because Cigueroa said in whatever it was back there, December or January or February, that while I have some problems with this guy, I think we ought to keep him. I don't think we ought to fire him. And here he is a few months later having announced his own resignation, switching gears. So why is he switching gears? He's going to be known as the chancellor.
Exactly.
Instead of the chancellor who started the medical school, he's going to be known as the chancellor who fired Bill Powers.
Well, that's another thing to consider, right, as he figures out what to do, is he's sort of, for better or for worse, playing with his own legacy, right, the way this plays out. But he would probably argue, and he has not been super forthcoming in this whole thing. So news of this broke on July 4th. He didn't put out a statement till Monday night, late Monday night, and he hasn't done any interviews. He did one short interview with the Austin American Statesman's op-ed board, and he said, this has been very difficult for me. And that's about it.
I think here I'm going to do a conspiracy theory.
But that was just
here.
My wind-up. I didn't even answer the question yet.
Oh, sorry. Well, I'm going to jump in anyway. Because I think there's something that Cigueroa knows that he's not revealing that must be pretty damning about Powers. Because I just, why would Cigueroa...
Please say darning. This
is... Public. Darning. Yeah, right.
This is a family-friendly podcast.
Why would Cigueroa, who is on his way out the door, he could leave this whole mess behind to somebody else, keep his own legacy intact as not being the guy who fired the beloved, you know, UT Austin president. I think there must be something that is so bad that Cigueroa knows that he cannot wait.
If there's not, then this whole thing has been just another episode in this strange Cold War where, you know, it's a sort of a proxy battle between like the governor and the legislature and the universities caught in the middle. And one of the things that I find interesting about this story is that it's
Well,
it's hard to understand it. It's it, you know, it, it's like, you know, the battles in Vietnam and Cambodia, but the real war is between Russia or between the Soviet Union and the United States. It's like this is all just sort of casualties of this war. It's a proxy war. It seems like it is to me. But I mean, if there is something that changes the narrative, then that then all of a sudden one side would win, right?
Do you think the I don't think that the conservative activists of the world that push the legislature on all sorts of policies just have a natural sudden interest in the University of Texas at Austin's administration. You know, it's like not a natural conservative liberal issue split, I think. I think there's definitely like a sort of a weird fixation on it that speaks to that proxy war idea.
Well, there's also the sort of the classic ivory tower versus the populist fight. And this is also going on around the country.
This isn't even that, though. This is the ivory tower versus the other rich white guys on the Board of Regents.
But right, to this but point,
why wouldn't Sigaroa have said in his statement, instead of like it's a breakdown of communication, why wouldn't he have said troubling information has come to light? And he, you know what I mean? Then it would be like, you know, here you can move on out or,
right.
or
have quit. A magic fact inside this black box.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So, to answer that, I would probably back up a little bit to Ross's earlier question and say that I think from Sigaroa's perspective, nothing has really changed since December. So in December, Power's job was up for
renewal.
A vote. No, just up for a vote. There was sort of the issue was on the table at the Board of Regents meeting, and Sigaroa recommended that he stay, but gave this little speech saying, like, look, our relationship is terrible. He said significantly strained. He didn't say terrible.
Right.
Our relationship is significantly strained, and I think you should stick around for the good of the university, but in order to stick around, you have to sort of cooperate with the system and play nicely and, and be a good citizen or something is basically what he said.
Your academic grades are good. Your comportment.
Right. right.
No, and that's basically what it is. You know, right. I mean,
your bedside manner sucks.
Right.
And so basically what he said in his statement that he put out on Monday night was the Powers administration has not cooperated with us and has not gone along. So basically my plan was I offered him this opportunity to leave in a way that let him finish out his AAU chairmanship and gave him time to finish up his $3 billion capital campaign. It was still a pretty tight timeline, right? I mean,
but why would this be a priority for Sigaroa on his way out the door? And why would this want to be what he's remembered by?
You know, it sounds to me like the votes changed among the regents. If you've got, you know, the scuttlebutt, because they never actually voted, right?
They never voted, right.
The scuttlebutt was that Powers had five votes. It's a nine-member board, that four members were ready to toss him out, but not five. And so, you know, I assume if you're going to come in and threaten a guy and say either you quit or the regents will vote to fire you, somebody changed their vote. So what changed that person's vote? Was it politics? Was it some fact? Was it, you know, some political fact? I mean, you know, it could be as simple as
could be as simple as just personalities, you know.
Could be personalities. But it's a lot to risk just for a personality fight, you know. I mean, like I said, you know, Sigaroa is trading being the chancellor who got the medical school built for this instead. You know, you're building your legacy. You're tearing down Powers, and it's very difficult to tear down the chief executive of a big institution without also tearing down the institution. And there's a fair number of former Longhorns. I'm not one of them. But there's a fair number of former Longhorns and current Longhorns who think this is about an Aggie governor and an Aggie administration tearing down the Longhorn so that the Aggies can be so Texas A&M can be the first university. I mean, there's a million things going on and a million speculations going on. And the main reason for that is because these guys on both sides of this won't show their hand.
And the chancellor has denied that this came from the governor's office or pressure from any regents. He said this was my office's decision.
Maybe he doesn't want Powers to outstay him.
Well, that's one of the, you know, there, like Ross said, there are 1,000 theories out there, right? But you could just flip that logic to say he wants to do this before he leaves so that he can have some influence over the presidential search process. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, there's a process thing here, too, that's, you know, sort of on the back burner. UT goes into the next legislative session, which starts in January, potentially here, well, certainly here without a chancellor or with an acting chancellor or with an interim. and potentially with an acting or interim president in a year that's going to be a tough budget year for universities. And you know, what Powers seems to be arguing on one hand, I mean, one of his things is, I'll leave, but I want to leave in June so that I can walk through this legislative session. Right. They could go naked into the legislative session.
Well, and he's got a legislature full of people who are his allies. You know, I mean, it makes sense that Powers wants to stick around through the legislative session.
Though a lot of those allies are on their way out or significantly
less
sort of,
empowered than they have been in previous sessions. Yeah.
If there's not some smoking gun, though, and Michael Quinn Sullivan, the conservative activist, suggested that there was a smoking gun, that it was some kind of, you know, UT admissions deal where there's maybe another lawmaker who got somebody in with undue influence.
I mean, there was a whistleblower or something like that.
Yeah, a whistleblower. I mean, so, you know, but if there's not a smoking gun, this is going to be. It's not going to be resolved. It's still just going to be one side against the other.
But I could also see Sigaroa not revealing a smoking gun because that's kind of the way he is. Like,
he's not very forthcoming.
He's not very forthcoming. And at the end of the day, he may know something that he never reveals publicly because it'll hurt, you know, damage the reputation of the university system.
You can't keep the whole state at the children's table here. You got to let some of them at the adults table to figure out what this is about. I mean, how does a legislator vote in this thing? How does a legislator take a side? How does somebody who's in a responsible third-party position and not just, you know, a noisemaker like us. How does somebody look at this thing and say, wait a minute, what's at stake here? What's the proxy war Jay's talking about? Explain this to me. These guys aren't explaining anything.
Well, of course, this is all happening against the backdrop of the Wallace Hall, the regent who is being investigated by the legislature, who could be impeached. So it would be interesting to see if the legislature turns around and just hits the button on impeachment, sort of a mutually assured destruction thing, to go back to your Cold War analogy.
Right, and it's totally – and I can see how it's in Wallace Hall's interest to keep the smoking gun sort of in the box for a while, and then if you're just like an impeachment hearing, you pull it out. I mean, that would be the time to pull it out, whereas with Sigaroa, it's like now.
But it's certainly – I mean, you know, this has been – years in the making, right? And Powers' job has been on the line multiple times, and there's been just ongoing personality conflict with very little actual substance revealed by either side for years. So it's sort of a theme.
Yeah, I mean, from a news value perspective, at least things are finally happening, you know? I mean, we've been watching all this smoke around this fire for so long, and now it's like, you know, action.
Yeah, finally Harry Potter's going to fight Voldemort. Here we are, seven books into this thing. Fight him!
So I guess, you know,
I haven't read any of the Harry Potter books. Confession. Hashtag confession.
Oh. Now we have to talk about that. Yeah. That's a real crisis.
Holy cow.
Now you've really got an issue that people care about. Well, I mean, the thing is, many people listening to this will know the outcome at this point. So, you know,
boy,
congratulations.
Boy, are we going to sound dumb.
Yeah, right. So write us a note at...
We just like to...
You are an idiot.
We'd like to congratulate everyone that still has their job. Moving on. To what else is going on this week? President Obama is coming to town.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, this is another one we're straddling. I guess he's in town as we're taping. Going to do fundraisers in Dallas and in Austin, two of his favorite fundraising cities in Texas. I think if you check the numbers, he's raised more in Dallas and in Austin than in Houston or San Antonio. So those are kind of his two ATM
right.
spots. He's also landing in the middle of this border crisis, or whatever you want to call it, with 50,000 accompanied and unaccompanied children on the border, and the federal and state governments figuring out how to process them and how to keep the border secure. And, you know, the
he just announced $3.7 billion that he was requesting.
Right.
He's asking for $3.7 billion, which seems like so he's asking for it, and he's now getting criticized for asking for it too late and asking for not enough.
Well, if you go past the soundbites for just a second, there's a Bush era law on the books that requires these kids to be processed before you do anything with them. You know, you have to take them in, and having taken them in, they have to go through a legal process in order to deport them or to decide, you know, what you're going to do with them.
And a court date established.
So part of this money is we don't have the court capacity to handle all of these cases. So they got to get some judges in there. They got to do some courts really fast. In the meantime, while you're processing them, you have to take care of them somehow. So there's money for that. And then you have this conversation about border security and policing and all of that kind of stuff. That has to be done. You have all of these healthcare things. You've got to vaccinate these kids so they don't bring in, you know, whatever is the current disease in Honduras or Nicaragua or wherever. You have to do all of that. So that's what the $3.7 billion is. The governor has made a big border security issue out of this. He's actually, I think, making some political points. He's pretty much in tune, according to our polling, with where certainly Republican voters are in Texas and really where most, you know, the majority of voters in Texas are on deportation and immigration.
Does going on national TV and saying that the border crisis is a – implying that the border crisis might be a sort of manufactured by the presidential administration, does that earn him points or lose him points?
It depends on with whom.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that probably resonates with conservative voters right now. And, you know, it happens at a time, you know, if you look at the political environment we're in, we're, what, 80 days before an election? And, you know, Obama's unpopular in Texas. 74% of Texas Republicans in our last poll said that they would support immediate deportation of undocumented immigrants of any age in the country. 54% of voters overall in Texas feel that way about it. You know, I think the governor's on pretty solid ground.
Oh, this is a huge opportunity for him. I mean, you know, this is an issue that he was beat up on the presidential campaign trail when he came out and said, you know, those of you who don't want to give in-state tuition to kids of illegal immigrants, you know, don't have a heart. That was basically the end of his campaign. Right. Many ends, but that was one of the ends of his campaign. You know, now he's in a place where he gets to really play the heavy on border security, where he says, you know, to the president, all you want to do is shake my hand on the tarmac in the middle of this crisis, and Obama says, basically, okay, I'll meet with you.
Right.
You know, I mean, Perry holds the cards right now. He dominated a congressional hearing on the border on this issue. This is exactly where he wants to be. This has fallen into his lap.
Well, and the other thing is we're not talking about any potential other Republican presidential candidates this week. We're talking about Rick Perry. We're not talking about Chris Christie or Jeb Bush or
this is shaping up to be a good week for Rick Perry, I think. And I think too that, you know, both sides are just going to try to pull some kind of political advantage on this, and Obama's going to say, "Look, you said you wanted money, you said you wanted attention. I'm offering $4 billion. You should take it." And there is sort of, you know, if you do eventually look past the politics to the policy of it, the border security, that phrase border security, I mean, what does it really mean? These people are turning themselves in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how many cops you have down there. You could have the entire Department of Public Safety, all the Border Patrol, take them from Canada and put them on the border. These kids are still going to walk across and turn themselves in.
It's more like because a refugee situation.
When they turn themselves in, then, I mean, you know, are you going to just say, okay, you know, you need to just walk back across the border? I mean, that sounds good. It's a good soundbite. You probably can get some cheap political points out of that. But the bottom line is, once they get across on our soil, we have rules and you have to be processed. And I think I read somewhere that we have like 7 judges or something in Texas. I mean, we obviously that do this kind of thing. We obviously do not have enough infrastructure to do this.
50,000 kids divided by 7. Right?
Yeah, I mean, there's just not, you know, people aren't going to get a hearing. I mean, they obviously need to have, you know, some kind, they need more judges, more infrastructure to process these people. Mm-hmm. And then maybe there is sort of a some kind of fast track legislation. Like you said, the Bush era legislation, that's what came into play here. And, you know, where you sort of look at these situations and decide, is this a refugee? If we send this person back, are they going to be killed because they're wanted somewhere in some unfortunate, unfair way? And we're just going to send them back and let them be killed? I mean, that's really not the American way. So it's going to take some time to process these things. But the idea that, like, because of this, because people are coming across and turning themselves in, that somehow the security apparatus is broken, I think is obviously been demagogued a little bit.
Because they're actually taking advantage of the security apparatus. That's
right, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. They're coming in and just actually just turning themselves in because we don't because there isn't a quick deportation. So the issue is really, I mean, the Congress needs to step in and do something about it, and
Well, politically, I mean, I think back to that political point for a second, I think it's interesting that Rick Perry has been able to sort of dominate the limelight around this issue. You know, there was a joint press conference, I think early last week or late the week before, that was Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott, which was kind of like, you know, an interesting duo. Those guys were together right. in San Antonio. But I haven't seen either of them really sort of dominating the spotlight on this issue, which is a huge issue, could potentially be a huge issue for both of them. It's really been the Rick Perry show, yeah, which Perry, I think is interesting.
Perry sort of took over that hearing, and he's been all over cable TV and all over the news, and you know, I mean, he's done a good job of stepping in front of everybody.
But you know, like you said, this whole idea of a conspiracy, I mean, there are dangers too, because when you get the spotlight, you know, just like with the oops moment or whatever, you can't squander it. So there are some dangers there. You have to be careful not to kook yourself up.
Kook yourself up. Yeah. I like that.
We've learned that.
That's
the hard
a clinical
way
term
here on the Tribcast. Yeah. Is this something that you know the Texas legislature has much involvement in? Obviously, the leadership decided we're not going to have a special session, even though we'll do some emergency funding for it. But I guess immigration is largely a federal issue, or is this something that will dominate the 2015 legislative
session? I think they're going to play around within the marketplace of sound bites here. You know, I think they're going to have a lot to say about it. There's not really a lot they can do about it. You know, to the extent that they think this really is a border security problem, where they think there's some kind of police issues here, you know, they can step in and fund or defund this or that operation in the Department of Public Safety. They can do some things with highways. They can do some things like that. But mostly this is a federal thing. It's a federal border. It's, you know, federal border secure, border patrol, customs, all of that kind of stuff. And you have to focus federal attention on that and on the underlying problems, what's going on in, you know, in all of these countries where these refugees are coming from.
And this is another one of those areas where we focus a lot of time and attention on things that in the state we can't do all that much about. And then the areas where we can do something, there's virtual silence. I mean, one example of that is worksite enforcement. I mean, the state of Texas could pass a law tomorrow. I mean, if they were in special session and says that every employer would have to use E-Verify. But Greg Abbott has already said, the attorney general and Republican candidate for governor, has already said that he doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to put a new burden on business. But so really the message that we send to not just forget about the kids for a second, but the message that we send to, say, an able-bodied Mexican laborer in some village in southern Mexico is, you know, we're going to have this wall security apparatus, but if you can get through it, we have a job for you. And that's exactly what's going on. I mean, you can go to any construction site. I can take you anywhere. In 5 minutes, I could find you an undocumented immigrant working in downtown Austin. And nobody is hassling them at all, to relatively speaking.
Well, and another issue that could be dealt with here in the state that Abbott is sort of tied to in the headlines lately is this sort of chemical disclosure issue. Can you talk about that, Jay, and how that's sort of come up in the public consciousness?
Yeah, well, WFAA TV broke a story, I guess maybe a month ago, about the fact that Greg Abbott had ruled as Attorney General that these Tier 2 reports, which are reports that catalog dangerous chemicals that are stored at like fertilizer plants and chemical facilities, that the state Department of Health Services no longer has to release those pursuant to an open record request. So if you're a citizen and you ask this state agency for this list of chemicals, Greg Abbott says they don't have to give it to you anymore.
And in theory, that's to protect from, you know, terrorism or malfeasance, people who want to do bad things.
It was a 2003 Texas law that Abbott cited in this opinion that basically says, you know, these are, you know, in the case of chemical stockpiles that could be used by terrorists, you don't have to make this public.
Mm. Right. And so Brett Shipp of WFAA tried to catch up with Abbott at the convention, and he sort of, you know, semi-famously in our political circles rolled away from him and wouldn't answer the question. And so for a while, you know, there was just silence on this issue. And then last week he came out at a press conference, a sort of informal press avail, and we asked him, you know, what about this? And he said basically that you should just ask the chemical plants –
That you could drive around.
You could just drive around and ask the chemical plants themselves, because there is, under the Community Right to Know Act, there is a provision that says that it actually says in writing they have to give you this information. And so it just really sparked a furor, and the Wendy Davis campaign, of course, has tried to take full advantage of this.
Well, this idea that you're really putting the burden on, you know, right, average citizens who have kids at home and jobs and lives and, to go hunt around.
This same reporter, Brett Shipp from WFAA, went out immediately and started knocking on doors around Dallas and saying, you know, what you got in the yard out there? And, series of doors slamming, that report got pretty widespread play.
I think it's an unforced error from Greg Abbott, because he went out, he did this press avail and just dug a deeper hole, and then he had an interview with the AP, dug another deeper hole. There's an op-ed that he wrote, and I've read it like three times. it just came out, and it basically says that we have to do this in order to protect against terrorism, but we also have to give the information to citizens. But to me, there's just a disconnect there. I mean, if you either have to give it out or you have to keep it secret, and there, never the twain shall meet, how can you do both?
There might be some citizens that have ties to terrorists.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if a citizen can get it, a terrorist can get it.
And to do this, let's put obviously this in context of this massive explosion at the West fertilizer plant last year. To do this at a time, such an unforced error, I think, at a time when that is still so fresh on everybody's minds. People had no idea what types of chemicals were being stored there, no idea that their entire community was going to be flattened. Are you putting the burden on those people buying those homes, working in those communities to figure out what's stored, less than a mile from their elementary school or from their senior center?
They're going to have to find a way. I mean, presumably after the gubernatorial race, maybe in the session, they're going to have to find a way to say, here's what's near your neighborhood and it's secure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. The thing in West was, I think it took out four schools. There weren't kids at the schools at the time, but, it took out four schools, and nobody knew that that all of these fertilizer chemicals and everything were being stored that close to the schools and what those chemicals could do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and is it enough of an unforced error to move anything in the polls? Is anything enough to move anything?
It's given Davis something to talk about, and, she's. As Jay said, an unforced error is never good. You're in a situation in a governor's race right now where, in order to pull this off, the Democrats are going to have to run a really good campaign, and the Republicans are going to have to make some mistakes. And we've got part two of that in action.
I think this is an example of one of those things, though, that drives the conversation in the media and that doesn't really resonate at the ground level.
I'm not so sure about that. This is Greg Abbott's race to lose. He's far and away the front runner. I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario when he would where he would lose. But I do think that people kind of get this, because if you say that, secrecy of dangerous chemicals in the wake of West, like you said, I mean, it's a hard message to sell. And I think that the sort of scrambling around after this decision did not look good either, because it was, at one point he said, I didn't really know about it until afterwards. And you can't really make that argument. That doesn't fly. I mean, your office did something, and unless you repudiate it and say, this was a mistake, I'm going to reverse it, then you have to own it. It's your decision. And so, and this op-ed, now he's saying the legislature wanted this, but I'm not sure the legislature did want this. And if the legislature wanted the state agency not to give it out, why would they want fire departments to give it out? There's some logical disconnect here that I think is going to continue to play out until there's some kind of solution or some kind of policy where you can contain this, the damage of this decision.
So you think it does have longevity as an issue going forward?
Yeah, of course people don't want terrorists to blow up parts of their cities, but they don't want anybody else to blow them up either. And you've got to figure out a way to say, okay, we're going to put these dangerous things here, so don't build anything precious next to it.
Well, unless anyone has anything else to say on any of these topics.
Not the golden-voiced warbler, J-Root?
I think I'm done.
That was warbling. How about that?
Uh-huh. Well, if anyone out there has something to say, they have questions or comments, they can send them to tribcast@texastribune.org. Or if they'd like a ticket to Jay's 5-minute tour of the undocumented workers of downtown Austin, they can sign on to that as well. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music. You can see them at Blues on the Green in Austin next Wednesday. And on behalf of Emily, Jay, Ross, and our producer, Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
It's Monday at 9 a.m. I'm sitting here watching the rain coming down. We got a half an inch. We got an inch. It's never going to rain again.